beats the bushes for the story. He beats the crap out of them. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we are back. The Toronto Blue Jays open a three-game series against the Minnesota Twins tonight at Target Field. Yeah, it's Target Field. This is a ballpark that a lot of Blue Jays players enjoy hitting in, including Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion. By the way, you can catch the game on Ontario East West and Pacific, 8 o'clock, first pitch tonight. And Blue Jay Central will be at 7:30 with Zahn and Campbell. They'll get you set for the game against the Twins. Joe Siddle is our Blue Jays radio analyst with Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Joe Siddle joins us from, a city that I think is one of the most underrated road cities in the American League, Minneapolis. How you doing, Joe?
Good morning, Jeff. Good, thanks.
Go to Hell's Kitchen?
Yes, I did.
It's not bad, is it?
First place I went after your suggestion. I'm kind of a breakfast guy too, so it serves breakfast all day, which I love.
Homemade ketchup, homemade peanut butter, nothing wrong with that.
Pretty good stuff, yes.
All right. You sound like you mean it. That's good.
It's pretty chilly here too, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that was my first question. Weather forecast for today. What are we looking at?
It's, I think, in the 40s and highs. I don't even think it's going to touch 50 today. So I think the high was 5 or 6. So it'll be a chilly evening, to say the least. But now I understand. My family sent me a text this morning. There's snow on the ground.
No, they're lying. Your family. It's gorgeous here. What are we looking outside now? It's like 11 degrees and quite sunny here.
There is snow in Windsor. That's my hometown.
I'm kidding. There is snow. There's rain.
Did you?
Oh, Hamilton got it. Toronto got it. Oh, hell yeah. Oh yeah.
Jeez.
And my mother tells me that if we get snow on Good Friday, it means we got another 40 days of winter. That's an old Midwestern prairie thing. So the way this winter's going, what's another 40 days? So Mycerus Turris out for 4 to 6 months with a knee injury. Now, normally, you know, you'd look at it and go, well, a bench player's hurt. But Mycer had gotten off to a pretty good start and seemed to be a guy that John Gibbons had an awful lot of confidence in. I'm not going to say he's irreplaceable, but things have been going so well defensively for this team, and it looked like they maybe started to turn the corner offensively as well. This is not a good time to have an injury, is it?
No, you know, Mycer had cooled off lately, but he has absolutely stabilized the middle of that infield after Reyes went down. And I tell you, it's been a strength of the team, the two guys in the middle, and they've been rotating around, he and Goins and Diaz, and they've just been playing outstanding defense, which we know, and I think every pitcher on this club will tell you, helps a pitcher out. And Mark Burley for one the other day again. It's just that defense up the middle, you always hear that term in baseball, but boy, when you start watching a lot of games in a row, you can see why. And it really bails pitchers out of innings. They turn double plays that otherwise wouldn't be turned. And he'll be missed. And the only positive that can come out of this is hopefully Jose Reyes is indeed gets a clean bill of health and is good, ready to go here this weekend.
Now, what are the plans? I know Munenori Kawasaki is being called up. Is the plan right now basically to go with Diaz and Goins most of the way and use Kawasaki as a utility guy?
You know, it's interesting you say that. This all happened, like, as media here, after the game when we left Baltimore. That's when we had heard. We obviously heard he got taken out of the game, Mycer did. We didn't know the extent of it, but he was hobbling pretty good when he got on the bus when we left Baltimore. And then with the day off yesterday, I haven't heard a whole lot. So my question would be, if you have Diaz and Goins in the middle, of course the offense is going to be a little bit struggling, right? Those are not big-time hitters. Now, I know they want Ryan Goins. He was going to be the second baseman to start this season, so he's got to get going. I think Kawasaki would be that third guy right now. I would personally go with Goins and Diaz. Now, you know, you're facing a tough righty. Maybe you throw Kawasaki in there and give Diaz the day off. And believe me, if Diaz has the day off, it's not a day off because he will see action later in the game. That's just the way it's going with that glove of his.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, one of the other things that interests me now, Jay Happ's called up. He's going to be working out of the bullpen. At some point, they're going to have to make another call on one of these three pitchers. Are we still looking at some sort of competition between Happ, Rogers, and Redmond for for a long-term spot on this team?
Well, I think with those three guys, Todd Redmond's been very good. You know, he got the loss in Baltimore the other night, but he pitched great. Mm-hmm. When you're in extra innings like that, he did a great job. Esmiel Rogers has not been so good, and I think his days could be limited if that doesn't turn around real soon. And obviously you don't need these arms here. We had with a day off yesterday. So it's an interesting move. I'm wondering if it had something to do with J-Hab getting a clean bill of health, and as we've discussed, cannot be sent down without his permission and all those rules that you have to follow. So very interesting that he is here, and very interesting that going back to the eight-man bullpen, I'm sure this will be temporary, and something's going to have to shake down here soon. Then Casey Jansen's supposed to come off later in the week, Jose Reyes. So you're going to see lots happening. I don't know that right now the starting rotation is the starting rotation. It's not budging. Those long guys in the bullpen, yeah, you certainly don't need three guys like that down there. So I think we're going to see a shakeup here real soon. What it is, I'm not sure, but, you know, things move day to day here, and something could happen tonight. So I think they'll just take it day by day and see how things go.
Joe Siddle joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. What did you see out of Colby Rasmus and Brett Laurie in those past the past couple of games against Baltimore offensively that might suggest to you that they've turned the corner a bit?
Well, the one thing you see is results. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that you see a whole lot of a different approach or swing. These guys have been working their tails off, have not been getting results, and that's the most frustrating thing for a hitter. But they also stay the course. They feel like they're doing the right things, and whatever they're doing in the batting cage, from their tees, soft toss, all the drills that they do, taking it out onto the field for batting practice, you keep going about your business, tweaking along the way, talking along the way with hitting coach Kevin Seitzer. That's what hitting is. And I really believe it's just timing and rhythm, and we've talked about that before. And when hitters struggle, a lot of times there's not one particular thing you can do to fix it. You can't just say, come in the cage for an hour, do this, and you'll be all better. It doesn't work that way. And for those guys, much like Edwin was the same way, I think their timing was just off. And when I say timing, it can be a million things. It can be from where you're starting your hands to where you're launching them to your stride and when your foot gets down, so many different things, and then the actual swing path itself, that I just think finally they ran into some balls. They're kind of, you know, it comes back. It's not necessarily one particular thing, but results are a huge thing, I think, especially mentally. And hitting, when you get into a little hitting funk, as you like to call it, I think it's mechanical. When it lasts for a little longer than you want it to, now it becomes mental because you're hitting 083 or you're hitting 140, and it plays on you mentally. And this is the big leagues, and you know what? Nothing gets hidden. When you're in AAA hitting 140, you know there's not a whole lot of people that read about it and see it. But when you're in the big leagues, it's magnified. And I think they got some results in Baltimore on Sunday, which is very nice, and hopefully that's a sign of things to come.
You know, you're with the team. What was the mood like after they'd won that series against Baltimore? I mean, it is early. It's only 13 games. I get that. But that's I made the point. You can, you know, you can't, if you're the Blue Jays, you can't talk about even potentially having a shot at the playoffs unless you beat the teams in front of you. And the fact of the matter is Baltimore's one of the teams they have to take care of. That's a tough lineup. And they beat the Orioles. They won that series. That had to put a little spring in their step going into Minnesota.
I think it certainly puts a little spring in your step, but, you know, just being around the team, I don't see a whole lot of difference. I see a real calm demeanor all throughout. You know that a flight out of that city is a lot better when you come out with a win and a series win against an AL East opponent. But, yeah, which I like about that is that you don't see a whole lot. These guys are even keel. They know they're going about their business. And they also know it's not the end of the world if you lose 2-3 in Baltimore right now. Now, obviously, winning the series was a huge thing. And coming in here, taking 2-3 from the Twins, who actually had heated up a little bit. They beat mm-hmm. up in Kansas City last week. But I like that about the team. It is very early. It is, you know, even if you were 4-8 right now, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But where they're at right now is a good place, and I think most importantly is that rotation and another good performance by Dickey, and we'll see how these guys can follow up with Morrow tonight, because these are the guys that we said all along, this team's going to go as far as the rotation takes them. I always believe from spring training, and we talked about it lots, I think this team's going to hit and going to score runs. Just because they're struggling for the first couple weeks doesn't mean that changes. I have not changed my feeling on that. And hopefully Baltimore, again, is a sign of good things to come. But I like the demeanor of this team. They're going about their business. They know every game's not the end of the world, but you go about your business and try to win every day. It's the oldest cliche in the sport, but baseball's a grind. You play it every day, right? And it's not like football you play once a week or hockey or basketball. It's every day, so you can't lay low on too many on losses each and every day. You just got to go get them tomorrow.
Joe Siddall joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Joe, Jose Bautista, 10 home runs in 11 games at Target Field, a .362 average, a 1.466 OPS. You know, what is it about certain fields that make a hitter more comfortable? I mean, when you found, and I know you're going to drop one of those self-deprecating lines about don't ask me about my offense and as a player, but you don't have to do that. But you've been around a lot of players. You've been around a lot of teams. What makes a guy more comfortable in one ballpark than another ballpark? Is it the background? I mean, it might be the pitching in a lot of instances, but I mean, clearly 10 home runs in 11 games is pretty significant.
Yeah, I don't know that any particular park. I mean, when you're talking about home runs, it can just simply be that the ball travels in some parks better than others. And when you're a Jose Bautista, it doesn't usually matter where you play, that the ball is going to fly. But yeah, it's sometimes maybe the way that team pitches you and that you just have those pitchers figured up, because over the course of a number of years in the major leagues, these hitters and pitchers face each other an awful lot. So you kind of get a feel for one another, and maybe you're, you know, that little chess match we talk about mm-hmm. a hitter looking for certain pitches and certain counts and what he's going to do. Maybe they get a feel and they get comfortable. Now, players do change and cities change, but it's a funny thing, but I think it's just the statistics that pop out. I don't know that there's any particular reason. I'll ask Bautista that today, but I also don't want to jinx him.
Yeah, you don't want to do that early. By the way, I should also mention that Edwin Encarnacion has 6 home runs in 13 games at Target Field as well. I mean, they both hit the ball really well. He's hitting .356. They both hit the ball really well. And you're right, that could be a product of the way the Minnesota Twins pitch them as much as the ballpark. But those numbers would indicate, you know, if you're looking for a place to go after you've just whacked the Orioles for 11 runs, this is a pretty good park to go to if you're the Blue Jays.
The Twins have not pitched real well to date, so this could be a series of good timing. I said that in Baltimore before the game on Sunday. I said, Sunday could be a day that the Blue Jays offense breaks out, because you've got Ubaldo Jimenez out there on the mound who had been struggling, and maybe it's time for this offense. It might just be a good potion, and certainly it turned out to be that way. So that was a great thing. So maybe coming off of Sunday's big offensive output, maybe coming into Minnesota could be good timing against a team that's quite frankly struggled a bit pitching. So hopefully they can keep it rolling here in Minnesota.
Joe, it was good of you to do this. Thanks so much. Enjoy a few more hours before you have to get out to a very cold Target Field.
Thank you kindly, Jeff. You guys take care.
Take care. That is Joe Siddall, Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. There you go. That was a little shout-out to Hell's Kitchen, which, if you're ever in Minneapolis, by the way, is a fine place to go and have breakfast. Homemade peanut butter. Homemade ketchup. That's all I got to say. I mean, what's not to like? They have live music, too, in the afternoon. Could do with a more original name, though. Nonetheless. So there you go. We will have the Blue Jays on all of the Sportsnet channels, with the exception of 360, I believe, tonight. It'll be the Jays and the Minnesota Twins from Target Field. Blue Jays Central gets it going at 7:30. The game will, of course, be on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Joe Siddall, Jerry Howarth will have the call of the game for you from Target Field. And yeah, the Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion have some absolutely, absolutely sick numbers at that ballpark. And, and Joe's right. The Twins aren't pitching well. And the Twins have played better than a lot of people thought they would. But it's a pretty good opportunity for the Blue Jays if they can get any pitching at all. Brandon Morrow gets the ball in cold weather, which I'm a little concerned about. But, I mean, that could just be me. And there you go. And you know, of course, that Mycerus Turris is out for 4 to 6 months with a knee injury. Your favorite player, Munenori Kawasaki. Your favorite player, not mine. Your favorite player, Munenori Kawasaki, has been called up. And we'll see how John Gibbons uses him. And at some point, the Jays are, they've got Jay Happ here. At some point, they're going to have to make a call with Casey Jansen coming back on the pitchers. They've got Happ. They can't send him to the minors without his permission. You know about that. Redmond and Rogers, they'd have to put them on options to send them down. Really, at this point, as much as I love Esmel Rogers' arm, if I had to pick between the three of them, Esmel Rogers would be the guy that I would send out. And I would risk losing him in waivers if I'm the Blue Jays. But that decision will have to be made when Casey Jansen's ready to return. That could be next week. And as for Munenori Kawasaki, a lot depends on when Jose Reyes gets back. Jose Reyes and Casey Jansen, both in the process of getting back to health. And if the Blue Jays can hold, I would argue, if the Blue Jays can hold the fort until they get their leadoff hitter and everyday shortstop and their closer back, they will have had a pretty successful April. Those are two very important players for this organization, and if they can keep it together, I think the Blue Jays will have considered this month a success. So I want to get your take of 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Use the hashtag Blair Show. I want to talk a little bit about Jonathan Diaz. Look, we know that this city falls in love with spunky little guys who throw their bodies around and make acrobatic plays. And, you know, I had a lot of fun on Twitter last year with people who were, you know, I thought some of the over-the-top love for Munenori Kawasaki. And I mean, Shai Davidi actually caught me off guard one day because he said to me, you know, the guy just makes people happy. How can you rip a guy who makes people happy? And you know what? That kind of went right to my heart for about 10 seconds, and then I just went back on Twitter and ripped them. So I'm not ripping Munenori Kawasaki, but do you think, as a Blue Jays fan, because I know you all love Munenori Kawasaki, could Jonathan Diaz, spunky little Jonathan Diaz, be the guy that replaces Munenori Kawasaki in the hearts of Blue Jays fans? Because you know Toronto likes those spunky, overachieving guys who, you know, grit, all that stuff that I've never been able to actually quantify. Is Jonathan Diaz going to be the new Munenori Kawasaki? 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Join the conversation on social media. Use the hashtag Blair Show. He's a better defender than Munenori Kawasaki. There's not much doubt about that. I don't know about the bat. Munenori Kawasaki handles the bat well. Jonathan Diaz as well. Neither of them are going to tear the cover off the ball. To me, Jonathan Diaz is a more useful player because he is such a... He can be a difference maker defensively. And Munenori Kawasaki brings all that stuff that fans like, but I don't know if he can be as much of a difference maker defensively as Jonathan Diaz. So there's your topic for today. Now that Munenori Kawasaki's with this team, for a while at least, are you Munenori Kawasaki fans prepared to turn your love to Jonathan Diaz? Are you prepared to channel your inner spunky, gritty, little, overachieving, dirty uniform, tumbling all over the place, diving for balls, lust? Are you willing to give it up for Jonathan Diaz, or are you Munenori Kawasaki till you die? Eddie in Fort Erie, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
How you doing, Jeff?
Good, man. Okay, who do you like of the two of them? Because I know you. I know you're a Munenori Kawasaki fan.
Yes, that's true, I am. But you know what? I see Kawasaki more as a guy that can grind out an at-bat when he's pinch-hitting in a tough situation. Like, he did that a lot last year and did it pretty good, too, I might add. And, yeah, you know, I just think Diaz is better defensively, and that's why they brought him over for defensive purposes, and so far it's been working out great. So I think you should just leave Kawasaki for pinch-hitting, not necessarily in the infield.
Very good. And what are your thoughts on this series coming up?
you know what, they have to win this series. I mean, regardless if it's a sweep or two out of three, they have to win this series, because if they don't, then it's going to look pretty bad for them going to Cleveland. And you know what, they have a pretty good chance, like you said, like to beat them. I mean, Phil Hughes is starting, he's a fly ball pitcher, and the Blue Jays know him very well, and you know, you said Edwin and Jose can hit the home run, so we'll see what happens. I just hope that they win this series.
Eddie, I appreciate the call. Should mention, by the way, that Kevin Barker will join me on Baseball Central at 11 o'clock. And Mark Topkin, the beat writer for the Tampa Bay Rays, will join us. The Rays have announced that Matt Moore will undergo Tommy John surgery. This is significant because, you know, you've heard us hammer on and on about how the the Rays do such a good job of taking care of their pitchers. Between 2005 and 2009, they had one pitcher undergo Tommy John surgery. The only major league starter to spend a day in the DL between May 2008 and August 2010 was Scott Kazmir. And this is significant because the Rays are already in a position where Alex Colome is serving a suspension for PED use. He's out at least till May, until late in May, I should say. And they've already seen some of their other pitchers go down with injuries as well. This is an organization that really has really had a remarkable run of luck with pitchers. It's had a remarkable run of success. It's done a great job of monitoring pitch counts, a great job of developing pitchers, and it appears as if some of that magic with Moore undergoing Tommy John surgery, Alex Cobb in the DL with an oblique injury, Jeremy Hellickson out until June with loose bodies in his elbow, it appears as if that some of that magic has worn away. 416-870, we'll talk about that with Kevin Barker. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Spike in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Good, man. So are you a Kawasaki guy?
I am not a Kawasaki guy.
Attaboy.
I'm calling to reiterate my former sentiment on signing Stephen Drew.
Mm-hmm.
We lost his service. We need a major league ready player. There's too many other guys depending on a good year to not go and get the guy for even 2 years. Goins is not hitting. Diaz is not doing anything, you know, Brett Laurie-like.
Yeah, but I mean, Diaz isn't a Brett Laurie caliber player offensively. The thing to remember with this Tourist is there were people, Meister's Tourist was going to be a bench guy on this team. Best case scenario, or let me rephrase that, the scenario that the Blue Jays were pitching was Jose Reyes would be at shortstop and Ryan Goins was at second. At no point did anybody suggest Meister's Tourist would be an everyday second baseman. So from my point of view, what has happened with Meister's Tourist, Spike, is the Jays have lost a bench guy. I don't think they've lost an everyday player. Now, Stephen Drew ain't going anywhere to be a bench player. Stephen Drew's going to want to go someplace where he can be an everyday second baseman.
And I believe that we should just, you know what? Goins is a great kid and he's a great story, but my sentiments are that Stephen Drew should come and be our starter because, you know, for the sake of giving Goins a shot at the big leagues, we're going to let down the rest of our team, possibly. I don't think that's fair to Bautista, who took a lower-than-max contract to be here and be part of the build process. Encarnacion did the same thing. There's a few guys on lower pay scales than they would have elsewhere so that they could be part of the build. And now, for the sake of giving Goins a shot, we're going to not put him on the bench. He's not hitting. He deserves to be on the bench, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I'll let you respond, and I'll listen to you on the radio.
All right. Thanks a lot, Spike. Yeah. I'm really conflicted about Stephen Drew. It'd be an upgrade. I just don't know. I really don't have a sense of what it would take to get him signed. He's a Scott Boras client. He may just be obstinate enough to hold out until he gets a year plus on his contract. See, I think at this point, if you're Stephen Drew, you're a month into the season, you don't have a contract. At this point, you're looking ahead to next year. Now, you want to play this year. Don't get me wrong. You don't want to be out of the game for a year. You want to play this year, but I think you're looking ahead to next year already. And I think you're saying to Scott Boras, all right, if we get a deal done with somebody, there has to be either a second year or an option, a vesting option. Because I don't want to be in this position again. And if I'm the Blue Jays, I don't know if I want to go down there right now. I really don't. I need to see more of Ryan Goins before I make that decision. Now, and Spike, I'm with you. I've got my doubts about Ryan Goins offensively. I really do. We all do. But I need to see a little more. I need to see a little more. I don't know if the bounce I get from Stephen Drew, and it's not enough to make me want to commit to 2 years with the guy. Christian in Richmond Hill, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yes, good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Good, man.
I'm just calling. No one's mentioning the guy we had. He used to be a starter for the White Sox a couple years ago, Chris Getz. He hit 270, I think, 1 year, if I recall. How come we don't bring him up and give him a shot? He used to be a major leaguer a couple years ago, and I think he played pretty good DA, too, as well, for the White Sox.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, he's not the defensive player Jonathan Diaz is. And I think again, I think you still, if you're gonna bring up Chris Getz, you might as well go after Stephen Drew. You've got to see what Ryan Goins gives you at second base. I really believe that if you've committed to Ryan Goins as much as the Blue Jays have committed to him so far, you need to take this a little further. I don't know. You know, it's funny. I tried to get a sense from people about Chris Getz in spring training, and I got a lot of shrug of the shoulders from guys in the organization. You know, just, yeah, okay. Nobody really, at no point did anybody say, boy, I can see us bringing this guy up, and I can see him really helping us. I didn't get that. I got way more of a sense about it, about Jonathan Diaz, than I did about Chris Getz. I mean, people have been pounding on about Jonathan Diaz's defensive abilities for a while. John Gibbons has been a big Jonathan Diaz fan for a while. I never got that from Chris Getz. John in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, John?
Who cares about Mike Schuster? He's a backup player. They have plenty of them. You know, like, yes, he's hitting whatever, 285 with one double and...
No, that's and I made that point. Meisner's Turris was going to be a bench guy for the Jays, right?
I'm more interested in the David Price situation.
Mm-hmm.
He is much more interesting to me.
David Price.
Well, they got all these guys going down.
Yep.
They're not going to win, or they're going to maybe not win.
Who isn't going to win?
Tampa. What, you think they're going to replace Alex Cobb and Matt Moore? Just with, I know they can, because they always have some Superman down in the minors, but... David Price comes up for contract at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to be an interesting trade piece. That's a way bigger story. $14 million unsigned. That means poor teams can get him and rich teams can get him.
Yeah, well...
No, I'm serious.
Yeah, I am too. I don't see the Rays giving up on David Price because I don't think the Rays think that they're... I don't think the Rays will ever think they're out of it. They're certainly not ready to do it right now. I can guarantee you that.
Welcome. Wait, just wait. Not yet, but they've just had the same thing happen. They've had a body blow, like what happened to the Jays 2 years ago. And, you know, there was all this talk this season about how he was going to get traded and blah, blah, blah. That's why they only signed him to 1 year. Because now teams with that are poor, like Pittsburgh, can take him, and teams that are rich, like the Yankees, can take him. It's an interesting story. Watch it.
Yeah, well, no, we have been watching. We've been talking about David Price all along. I just, you know, all the indications that we get is that the Rays just aren't interested in moving him. And I can't imagine why they would, to be honest. The Rays, in their own way, the Rays expect to win every year. They expect to have a shot every year. And again, I don't see any pressure in them to move David Price. I would if they were going to move David Price, they would have done it in the offseason. That's my take. Yeah, and I don't I don't think, even with these pitching injuries, I don't think that they're necessarily going to fall that far out of the picture that they would end up seriously considering moving David Price. We'll know, though. We'll ask Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. He is the preeminent baseball reporter in Tampa. And we will ask him about the impact this might have on David Price. But I don't see the two as being necessarily combined. I think, by the way, I got to check. I don't think David Price is a free agent yet. He's a free agent in 2016. I'm just double checking that. Yeah, so he's not eligible. He's not a free agent until 2016. So there you go. But yeah, the Rays pitching situation will be something that absolutely needs to be monitored. As we said, they're not used to having guys go down with injuries. We'll talk to Kevin Barker about that. Baseball Central. Also want to talk a little more about why it is that Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion hit so well at Target Field. What makes a hitter feel unusually comfortable in a ballpark? Is it just the pitching? Is it the background? We've got a lot to talk about in Baseball Central. Got a couple of days to get caught up with. Want to talk about the Raptors. The Raptors raised it. I don't get this. I know they did it before. They raised the Atlantic Division banner last night. And I know they did it the last time. The only other time they won as well, they did it in season. I'm one of these guys. I like raising banners at the start of next season. It's like, I don't like celebrating stuff that's kind of made up right away. You know, big deal, Atlantic Division title. What, are they going to raise a banner if they finish third overall? They're going to have the third place overall in the Eastern Conference banner? Anyhow, it's just a minor niggle on my part. I'm not a big fan of sort of creating events. Paul Jones is the play-by-play voice of the Raptors in Sportsnet 590. The Fan. One more regular season game for the Raptors in the playoffs. And they're positioning themselves nicely. Paul Jones will join us. We're going to talk a little hoops when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
All right, they didn't even need DeMar DeRozan last night for a 110-100 win over the Milwaukee Bucks. The Raptors never trailed in this game. They're just basically trying to keep themselves occupied until the playoffs. Well, solidifying their playoff position. And I wondered, we're joined by Paul Jones, the play-by-play voice of the Raptors, a Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I've asked this question of you in the past, Paul, and I'd like to ask you again. These are games that the Raptors are able to win with some of their regular players. In this case, DeMar DeRozan sitting. They've had other games they've been able to win when Kyle Lowry's out. I think we're starting to see, or I think we've seen in those games, this team begin to get a little collective sense that it can succeed with some of its bench players playing significant minutes. Even if it's just against a mediocre team, the fact that the Raptors can have success with the bench guys playing significant minutes, I think really augurs well for the playoffs.
Jeff, and you know, that was one of the things that the trade did back in December. It gave Dwayne Casey some flexibility with his lineup and the ability to to match up with people and you know, put pieces into the game that are good matchups. I mean, you know, people would, you know, they'd be upset as to why Valanciunas wasn't in the fourth quarter. Well, when they run screen roll and he plays it like Shaquille O'Neal and he doesn't show out and the guy turns the corner and gets a 20-foot jump shot, and then the next time they run it, they set the screen a little lower and the guy turns the corner and he's got a 15-foot jump shot, and then the next time the guy's turning the corner and going by him in the lane, that's a problem. So what does he do? Well, he's got to put a smaller guy in who maybe doesn't match up as well, but plays defense better, but isn't going to give him the offense. There are all those things that make it difficult. Well, enter Chuck Hayes. You can bet if they get Charlotte, Chuck Hayes is going to be in there against Al Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can bet if they get Brooklyn, Patrick Patterson is going to be the guy out on the wing guarding Paul Pierce when Brooklyn decides they're going to play small. Or, you know, John Salmons is going to be guarding Pierce out there, and Patrick Patterson's going to be, you know, he's going to be, you know, chasing Plumlee. It gives them options, and you know, that's the biggest thing. And because we've had people on us about, you know, Casey's rotations and stuff like that. It's funny how those things have all gone away now that he's got people that can fit, you know, people that can help him match up properly. And now you've got to worry about matching up with Toronto when a guy like Patterson's on the floor, or they can stretch the floor and play inside out with Amir Johnson and Valanciunas down low. So I think the bench has been, it's been a real strength. It's been a real strength, and those guys are going to have to come through come playoff time.
Now, Paul, I'm going to ask you this, because I know the Raptors, the previous time they won the division title, raised the banner in season. Is that normal? Because I know a lot of people on Twitter and a lot of people were saying, wait a minute, isn't that something you do at the end of the, or I'm sorry, at either just before the playoffs or at the start of the next season?
Yeah, and I don't know if there's, it's kind of like moving, Jeff. I don't know if there's a good time.
you just kind of secretly drop it and say, oh, by the way, look at the new addition to the Raptors.
Okay, do you do it, as Dwayne Casey said yesterday in the pregame, it fires up the opponent.
Right.
So do you do it at the start of next year? I mean, look at the Miami Heat on ring ceremony night in Miami. They got drilled twice. Do you do it then? Do you do it at the start of the playoffs and take the focus away from, you know, hey, we just won division. Well, so what? You're in the playoffs now. Let's go get that. At the start of next year, it's inevitable. The team changes.
Right.
The team changes. All those guys that were there that helped contribute to that banner are not around. Dwayne Casey got his ring at center court before a game when he was the year after he was coaching Dallas and they won in Dallas and they won the championship. They presented it to him the year after. You know, center court before one of his games, and he kind of took it and went, thanks, put it in his pocket and headed towards his bench as if, I got to coach a game. So I don't think there's a good time. And I don't have a problem with it being done last night. You've won the division. You've got bigger fish to fry. You're playing Milwaukee. It's not like, you know, you're going to fire them up and they're going to come in and spank you by 20, 25, 30 points. I didn't have a problem with it being done yesterday. And you know, everybody's got issues around it. I don't think there is a good time, so get it done, get it over with, and move forward.
You know, Jonesy, just looking at the Eastern Conference, all these teams that are jockeying for position are playing so well. The Raps are 8-2 in their last 10. Chicago's 8-2 in their last 10. Brooklyn, Washington, 7-3. Charlotte, 8-2. You know, we've kind of a lot. It's kind of fun to poke fun at the Eastern Conference a lot of the time. When we compare it to the West, but there are a lot of teams that are really rolling into the playoffs,
well,
not limping in.
Somebody asked me a question on Twitter. Look at the records of the teams that are out of the playoffs lately. Well, no, it's the fact that the good teams, you know, oh, they're tanking. No, it's the fact that the good teams know that they need the games, and you're a bad team coming in, and bad teams now know they're bad teams. Referees know they're bad teams. Perceptions are out there. The good teams jump on the bad teams, knock them down, you know, kick them in the face, and that's the game. Who's next? Because the good teams, playoff teams, Charlotte, Washington, Chicago, Toronto, they need these games. They do. So that's what happens. And, you know, as much as people are killing the East, historically, go back and look at it. This Eastern Conference is probably no worse than, you know, what it's been in the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years. It started off really bad. They've gathered a little bit of steam. They've kind of beat up on each other. But all it takes is one. Go look at the championships the last little while and where the winners have come from, East or West. It doesn't matter how strong you are. Let's see who wins it at the end. And some people say, well, the teams out West, they've got to go through a lot more. Well, maybe they do, but you don't apologize for the team they put in front of you.
Paul, this Raptors team, is they've set a franchise record for wins. They have 48 wins. They can go for the 49th. It's safe to say that nobody saw this coming, I don't think, certainly at the start of the season and certainly when the Rudy Gay trade was made. But one of the things that's kind of intrigued me in the last 2 months, the last 2.5 months in particular, I don't get the sense that the Raptors players are overly surprised by this.
No.
And I don't know, what does that tell us about this team? Because you spend more time around them than I do. You're in the charter with them. But to me, it says a lot when a surprise team doesn't act like a surprise team. We've all seen teams that, you know, realize that they're not where they're supposed to be. We've all seen that in every sport. I don't get the sense from this team, though. Maybe they followed the lead of DeMar. I don't know what it is.
Well, I think, you know, even going further up the channel, Jeff, I think they followed the lead of Dwayne Casey. And even now, with as well as they're playing and the divisional banner being hung, here's a guy who's been to the very top of the mountain. So all of this stuff that's happening, it's part of the journey. We're on the way. It's running the marathon. We've run 15 miles, but there's still another 11 to go. We've come a long way. There's still a long way to go. And I think this team has adopted that, Jeff, because you hear them talking like that. Okay, no big deal. And to me, the biggest issue, and I asked DeMar this on Sunday in Detroit, he said the turning point for him was probably late December when they went to Dallas and they came back and they won that one, and then they go into Oklahoma City and win the next game and are, you know, nip and tuck right there with San Antonio and end up losing, you know, a pretty close game. And to him, and here's a guy who's experienced a lot of losing in Toronto, he said that was probably when he realized something was going on. And we've talked about it too. You have a belief. It develops into confidence. Because you start winning now with that confidence, it becomes a resiliency, and it solidifies, and you move forward from there. This team always believes they can win. And they're not surprised when, you know, they defeat Indiana at home. It's like, well, yeah, this is our joint. We know they're good, but we're good too. And I really like that. I really like that. I think a lot of that has come from Dwayne Casey. I think a lot of it has come from up at the top too with Masai. And the thing that people don't realize, Masai was a scout. So when Lady Luck has something to do with it, but when he's looking at players, this is a guy that used to be doing that on the front lines. And I think it makes a huge difference in his personnel moves. I think that's why he's been successful wherever he's been, you know, in Denver and now in Toronto and making deals. And he left that Denver team in pretty decent shape after the deal he made for Carmelo. And look at what they did last year. So I just think it comes from the top, Jeff. And it's what they expect. And I don't think they're surprised at all.
Jonesy, it was good of you to do this. I've been making the point all along that since I've been in Toronto in 2000, there hasn't been another Toronto sports story that I think is as surprising and as interesting. And I still think there are a couple of twists in this path. I don't think it's done by any stretch of the imagination yet. So I look forward to seeing you in the playoffs, my friend.
All right, Jeff.
Take care. That is Paul Jones. He is the Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And yeah, we got it. Tomorrow we got to deal with these Raptors ticket prices. I got something to say about that, but we got to deal with these Raptors playoff price increases. We'll do that tomorrow as we get you set. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Raptors in the playoffs. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. That is it for the Blair Show. Everybody, Dylan Brown just kind of. That is it for the Blair Show. Baseball Central with my co-host Kevin Barker's just around the corner. Hockey Central at noon. Hockey Central will be on at noon. They've got a big show. Barry Trotz just fired, or the former coach of the Nashville Predators, will join the boys. And Bill Daly, NHL Deputy Commissioner, will be in studio as well. So big Hockey Central ahead. And to get you set for that, we're going to have a little baseball. Kevin Barker slides in here. Baseball Central next, everybody.